America, Houston. I think this is what you wanted to hear. You're go for TEI.
Outstanding.
Okay, Gordo, understand America is go for TEI, and I'll give you a confirm on the star here in just a second.
Okie doke.
Say, Gordo, I got the moon now on the telescope beat just a little bit before I can give you a confirm on that, but the tap is set.
Okay, we'll go ahead and go into P-40.
Go ahead.
Gordy, could you give me a summary of what your expectations are on the operation of the pugs?
Okay, just a minute. Jack, Houston, we expect you'll need decrease throughout the whole burn. However, we'd like you to control it as required to keep it in the green band.
Okay, and why do you expect that, Gordy? I missed one of the burns.
It's just the way it's worked from past history. That's what we expect this time.
Okay.
Houston, we're down to 6 minutes in a checklist, except for the star sextant check.
Okay, Gene. Jack, Houston with a further word on the pugs. We have noticed after ignition on previous burns some oscillation. We suggest you stay in decrease for the first 25 seconds or so until it stabilizes before you start controlling it.
Roger.
America, Houston, about 2 minutes to LOS. One reminder about the DSE. We'd like you to go to low bit rate just prior to LOS as per the flight plan. And then go back to high bit rate at 6 minutes prior to ignition per your burn cue card. And you can just leave it in high bit rate from there on through AOS. We just went around the room once more. Everything looks good. Have a good burn, and we'll see you and the TV picture as you come out the other side, don't we?
Okay, Gordy, thank you. We're looking forward to a good burn, and we'll see you coming out the other side.
This is Apollo Control. We've now had loss of signal. Apollo 17, completing its last full revolution of the moon. Flight Director Chuck Lewis has just advised his flight controllers this would be a good time to take a 10 or 15 minute break and then be back on the consoles ready for acquisition of signal, at which time Apollo 17 should be on its way back to Earth. The final set of numbers passed up to the crew to perform the trans-earth injection burn are very close to those that we had earlier. A couple of very minor changes. The ignition time is 236 hours, 42 minutes, 8 seconds. That represents a change of 1 second. The total burn duration remains unchanged, essentially, at 2 minutes, 25 seconds. And this will impart an increase in velocity to the spacecraft of 3,046 feet per second. That represents a decrease of 1 foot per second over the numbers we had previously. Splashdown is targeted for a ground elapse time of 304 hours, 31 minutes, 25 seconds. In the Pacific, southeast of Samoa, the targeted splashdown coordinates are 17 degrees, 54 minutes south, and 166 degrees west. The television picture as Apollo 17 comes around into acquisition of signal, we regain radio contact, should be a very spectacular view of the lunar surface. The spacecraft at the time we acquire should be at an altitude of about 291 miles above the lunar surface, moving out at more than 5,500 miles per hour. And it will be almost directly over the crater Zielkowski, which is on the lunar far side, normally not visible from Earth. This will be the second time that we've had a chance to view the lunar far side via television from an Apollo mission. The first time occurred on Apollo 10. We were discussing that mission with the commander of Apollo 10, General Tom Stafford, who's here in the control center. Stafford also recalled it being a very spectacular view, as all lunar crews have reported. One thing he did point out is that Apollo 10 had significantly more velocity at trans-Earth injection than Apollo 17 will have, had a shorter trip time of something like 40 hours for the return, compared with about 68 hours for the return time on Apollo 17. This would perhaps cause the moon to shrink a little less rapidly than we recall it from Apollo 10, but nevertheless should be a very spectacular sight. The previous crews have described it. The moon is looking as if you were in a high-performance jet aircraft going straight up. and the moon goes from filling the TV screen to shrinking into a discernible sphere in a relatively short period of time, a matter of 10 to 15 minutes, as we recall. Again, the acquisition of signal time, the time at which we should have radio contact with Apollo 17, given a normal TEI burn, is 236 hours, 55 minutes. We have a clock in the control center counting down to that acquisition time. We're now 28 minutes, 14 seconds from acquisition. If for some reason the trans-Earth injection burn was not performed, we would acquire about 12 minutes later at 237 hours, 7 minutes, 18 seconds. This is due to the fact that without the burn, the spacecraft remains in a lower orbit and does not clear the lunar horizon and become visible to antennas on Earth as soon. Everything has continued to progress very smoothly leading up to trans-Earth injection. On the last front side pass, we fed up the final numbers to the crew. They made the final checks of their guidance and navigation equipment. And as they went around the corner of the moon, everything was looking absolutely normal. We did have one minor unexplained situation occur at the start of the revolution. Gene Cernan reported that he'd tried for 4 or 5 minutes to establish radio contact, and apparently not getting through. The instrumentation communications officer here in the control center checked with the various tracking sites, both the prime and backup sites, and they all confirmed that they had not heard downlink from the spacecraft, although we did have, that is, voice downlink. We did have good telemetry lock on and good solid signal strength. The indications that we had both on the ground and from the spacecraft were that everything was in the normal configuration, and we simply have no explanation for that 4 or 5 minutes when the crew was unable to contact us, but the communications equipment has continued to work absolutely normally, no sign of any problem and no concern. This burn, of course, is performed while the spacecraft is behind the moon, so we have no data on the maneuver. We'll get our first report of it as the crew comes back around on the lunar front side. Comparing this trans-Earth injection maneuver burn with previous burns, it's interesting to observe the flight controllers. They're certainly all aware that this is a significant event, leaving the moon for the final time in the Apollo program. But the atmosphere here in the control center is not much different from previous trans-Earth injection burns that we've observed. Having watched the spacecraft and crew perform this same maneuver flawlessly 7 times previously, there's obviously less of the tension that was evident at this time after Apollo 8, when Apollo 8 was preparing to leave the moon 4 years ago. We have a number of small clusters of people gathered around in casual conversation, and in about 5 or 10 minutes, I'm sure we'll see everybody returning to consoles, getting set to receive that first data from the spacecraft. We're now 12 minutes away from the time at which the crew will be igniting their 20,500-pound thrust service propulsion system engine. For 2 minutes and 25 seconds of what's been described as a rather stiff kick in the tail for the spacecraft that starts it on its path back to Earth. And we're now about 25 minutes from reacquiring radio contact with Apollo 17. At 236 hours, 31 minutes, this is Apollo Control, Houston. This is Apollo Control at 236 hours, 52 minutes. We're now a little less than 3 minutes away from the time we expect to regain radio contact with Apollo 17. And at that time, we should get confirmation from the crew that America is en route back to Earth. We have another clock counting here in the control center for the acquisition time that we can expect if the trans-Earth injection burn was not performed. And that now shows 14 minutes, 42 seconds until acquisition of signal. That, again, is the time that we would acquire if the trans-Earth injection burn was not done as planned. We have an interesting display at the present time, which is called up by our flight dynamics officer. And this display shows what the computers here in the control center predict that the current velocity of the spacecraft and its altitude are, based on the assumption that the burn was performed as planned. And if that assumption is correct, Apollo 17 at this time is traveling at some 7,800 feet per second and is at an altitude of about 237 miles above the moon and climbing rapidly. And we're now less than 1.5 minutes away from acquisition of signal. We're now less than 30 seconds from acquisition of signal. The next call will be ENCOS, the instrumentation and communications engineer, letting us know that we have radio signals from the spacecraft. We'll be receiving Apollo 17 through a 210-foot dish antenna at Goldstone, California. AOS Goldstone. We've acquired signal, but we're still waiting for a good solid lockup. And our data shows Apollo 17 at an altitude now of 335 miles above the lunar surface.
America, this is Houston. We'd like to high gain, please.
And we're beginning to get a picture of the lunar surface. This view from 400 miles up.
Houston, do you read America?
That's affirmative, America, and we have a picture. Over.
Roger, Houston, America has found some fair winds and following seas, and we're on our way home.
Okay, that's great news.
It sure is, Gordo.
You betcha, by golly, it's outstanding, very good. That was a good burn, too. We'll give you the burn report in a bit.
Okay. Roger.
The crater Ziolkovsky on the lunar far side, normally not visible from Earth, first seen by a Soviet Luna, an unmanned photographic mission. Crater is about 160 miles in diameter. And we're
this is a grand place to be right now.
But it is, and we got a great picture of Ziolkovsky. Got it right in the center. And good focus, great picture.
I know there's not as many smiling faces down there as there are up here, but we're making up for the difference in numbers.
Roger.
America, 500 miles above the moon now.
Gordo, I'll give you a quick burn report. The burn was on time. Burn time was 2 minutes and 23 seconds. Delta VGX was 30470. Attitude at the end of the burn was 184.005.359er. That's 184.005 and 359er. There was no trim. The residuals were -0.2, +0.7, plus 0.2. Delta VC was -18.1.
Roger, we got those.
And Gordy, the unbalance is about 30 pounds, and oxidizer 2.8 and fuel 2.9. And I blew full decrease the whole burn.
Roger, Jack.
How's the picture, Gordy?
Real fine.
This view looking back across the lunar far side at the highlands.
I can tell you exactly what we're looking at, but I can't quite see it.
Gordy, the country Gene's pointing out is south of the
orbit that we've been following for several days, Ron even more than Gene and I, and it's some of the striking country of the far side of the moon that human beings don't very often have a chance to see, but a trend's been started in the last few years, and I suspect it will continue.
Roger, Jack.
Gordy, America, performed superbly.
Operate now.
Thank you. Pantagam is going to operate.
And can you verify that you got the other Sembe items that precede that?
We're verifying it right now.
The spacecraft panoramic and mapping cameras are both operating at this time to record this view of the lunar far side.
Okay, Gordy, Sembe should be squared away.
Okay, thank you.
Slowness there.
Gordy, I'll try and take your car for Terminator if I can.
All right.
Of course, we're seeing country south of Tsiolkovsky now that we've never seen before.
Roger.
Tsiolkovsky back, I think maybe even you can see one of the things that both Ron and I have noticed about it is, number one, it's a basin that is comparable in its freshness and apparent age to the probably the Imbrium Basin on the near side of the moon. And secondly, it has an unusual area in its northeast quadrant that from which the blanket is excluded. There is an apparent slide. We're not sure what it is, but the normal indications of an ejecta blanket are just not there.
Roger that, Jack, and we can see those features you just described. The camera...
Okay, and for your...
figure
for
out
your...
a way to hold it a little steadier, that would help, but we're getting a good resolution.
Okay, Gordo, I'm working on it. You think a guy who's been there for however many days we've been there could find it, don't you?
When you see Tsiolkovsky south, the central peaks form an arrow that points south, Gordy.
If you look closely at the northeast rim of Tsiolkovsky, you'll see a large landslide that Al Worden first described on Apollo 15. Crew now moving the camera apparently to a different window. Apollo 17 now at an altitude of 825 nautical miles.
America Houston, your altitude right now is 835 miles, over.
Okay, 835 miles. And climbing out like a dingbat.
North is now at the bottom of this picture.
20, we're taking on Mag Papa Papa. That altitude.
Okay, Ron.
There's Smithy down there. Finally figured out where we are. Right down underneath the window. I can see it now.
As far as we can, we'll try to run you a little bit along the orbital track. I'll be panning the camera more or less westward. Kowski is starting, and Silkowski is itself in the crater Fermi. And moving on to the east, the next big pair of craters that we spent some time studying is Hebert, which is just south, is right there. And just a little bit northwest of there is Pasteur.
That's a check.
Both Hebert and Pasteur appear to be very old basins, much older than Silkowski, and they have as you can see, a fill in them, a apparent fill, very flat, looking at this distance, and very light colored. It's an event on the moon of which we have relatively little understanding at this time, but possibly the Apollo 16 results, when they're fully known, the analysis of the samples and other data may shed some light on that event.
Roger. Sorry to interrupt, but we'd like pan camera off now.
That's a full
pan camera standby, ready.
Okay, standby. Now, we're going to be able to pan a little bit more east now of Pasteur and start to show you the crater Smithy, the basin Smithy, really. It's one of the older large basins on the moon. It has none of the obvious features of big basins, such as Imbrium or Serenitatis, but it's nevertheless roughly circular, has a Mare fill, and a very, I'm pointing right now to the hint of a second ring outside. But the main ring is the one Ron's talked to you a lot about and has his double ring craters in it, and we're pointing at some of those right now.
Uh-huh. Okay, Houston, we can now see Tycho. We're seeing probably about 75 to 80% of the entire moon, the face anyway, lit up. The rays of Tycho are very obvious from here.
Want the camera over there, Gene? Show it to him.
We had a good tour there at Smithy. We recognized the Smith brothers, the Wright brothers, and started to see Nepper before you left it.
This view from the moon at an altitude of more than 1,000 miles.
Tackle for a little bit.
the large crater in the lower right corner is the crater Humboldt.
You can, Langrenus is visible now at the edge of Fecunditatis there, if you want to show that one. That's the side of Fecunditatis. And Humboldt is a crater that ought to show up very well on the television. That's the cracked floor crater there with a little dark margin. Okay.
There's all the swirls in the Martianus. You can really see them now.
Oh, yeah. Why don't you
show the swirls?
Okay, early in our orbit, particularly Ron, he had a chance to work on the question of these light-colored swirls, and Marginus has outstanding examples of them, and I'll try to get the camera pointed on those. In the northern part of Marginus, let me orient you as soon as we're focused here. Okay, Smithy, I'll point right at the center of Mare Smithy, and then move up towards Nepper, and then into the swirl area a little bit more north, and Gene will zoom you in and let you see what some of that looks like. I don't think we have a full answer of what the swirls are, but some of the things that we saw in Taurus Littoral and later from orbit around Sulpicius Gallus, may suggest to people from now on that the possibility of alteration from fluids in the interior of the moon is more than just a possibility.
Roger, that's a nice shot there of Marginus.
Can you see the swirls, Gordy? Are the very diffuse light-colored areas that cross various topographic features.
That's affirmative, Jack. They're visible from here.
They are. Okay, I'm going to give you an end-on view, if I can, of Mare, of the Christian Basin. You should be seeing that now. How is that, Gene?
That's a good picture, Chrisium. It's very evident on the right side of our picture.
Yeah, that's right. And before long, we'll be able to show you the landing site and Taurus Littoral, and I think you probably see Proclus, which is the bright crater just off the horizon now. That's the one with the excluded ray zone on its western or southwestern side. It's not in view yet.
We may not see it. I think we're going the other way.
Right in the horizon. The landing area, Taurus Littoral, and the edge of the Serenitatis Basin is probably just on the horizon now, and I'm not sure exactly.
Yeah, you can see the dark part of Serenitatis is sticking out of the Sea of Proclus in the ray excluded zone. No, that's Fecunditatis sticking up there, isn't it? Because the ray perpendicular to our track now points right to the landing site, right off of Proclus.
The area where one of the Russian vehicles set down and returned sample from is just about in the center of your field of view now, just on the north side of Fecunditatis.
Roger, and you're about 1,300 miles up right now.
Wow.
Not a bad climb, is it, Corey?
Pretty good rate.
A friend of mine says, wow, woozle.
Good, looking out the window three now, and the moon is just the size of the window, and I got my face right up against the window.
Or maybe his head's just the size of the moon. We're not sure which.
That's right.
I don't know what's happening down there now, Gordy, but this is where the action was one time.
Okay, we're starting to, I think, in a little bit be able to show you the edge of the Serenitatis Basin. It's moving a little slowly right now. It looks like it's creeping over the horizon.
It's going to creep over the horizon, maybe, but I think...
I tell you what's on the horizon now. I'm not sure I can get it. Let me try the rendezvous window. I think I can show them Apollo 11's landing site.
Yeah, right beyond it, right?
You probably can get it. It's the south portion of Tranquility there. If you can... out the center window would be better.
Yeah, center window, you can get it.
See the southern part of Fecunditatis, and then the Tranquillitatis takes off to the west there, Gene, right along that southern edge of Fecunditatis is where Apollo 11 set up. And a little bit north of the line at, of the ray of those two things. Okay, Gordy, the center of your picture is about right in there is the edge, southern edge of Tranquility and the Apollo 11 area, and that was the ground track, of course, for Apollo 8 and Apollo 10.
Roger.
Langrenus, which is one of the Copernican age craters in the this part of the moon, and I believe it was Apollo 12 had an excellent opportunity for several orbits to study Langrenus.
Roger, we see that. It stands out like a beacon there on the right side of the picture now, and we also saw SEA with its rays.
You're a little bit off the field. Let me move. We're almost out of the field here. Let's see. Proclus. Our landing area is just about in the center of your field of view, right at the horizon now.
Roger.
That's the best focus we got, James. Okay, full zoom and right in that region in the center should be the landing site of Apollo 17, known hereafter, I guess, as the Taurus-Littrow area.
You're now 1,500 miles above the surface, and your climb rate was just computed at 295,000 feet per minute.
That is really moving out. We're glad they cleared the traffic out of the way. Let me switch over briefly and show them the north and south poles, which nobody has really done much with yet, except for Lunar Orbiter and some of the Russian vehicles. There's a spectacular valley off on the south pole. I don't know the name. It looks like one of these long chain of craters. Did that show up here? Let me try it. Get it. something where, huh? Good picture? That's in the south polar regions. There's, I think you can probably see a long chain of craters, which so far unvisited by man. In fact, the whole region has, and that goes to the North Pole.
Roger, Jack. That's very interesting. Can you zoom in on that valley?
I think that's the best we got, Gordy. That's full zoom.
Roger.
It's one of the biggest chain crater valleys that I've seen on the moon. We saw some crossing Mendeleev in the first few days. I think we talked about similar in shape, but not nearly as big.
Roger.
Let me move over briefly to give you another view of Humboldt, which should show up very well now. We're just about directly overhead. It's unusual, one of the few craters on the moon that have a fairly flooded floor that appears to have been domed, and you probably can see some of the cracks in that floor.
Okay, it's in the center of the field now, however, something's blocking the right side of the view.
How's that?
That's real good now.
Around the edge of the dome floor, you can see some of the dark mare that is prevalent elsewhere in the region, but not so abundant within Humboldt.
Roger.
And you can see, if you can see, check if you run
Oh, okay.
At the window.
Oh, all right. Hey, there's another view, you will bear with us, of our old friend Silkowski.
Roger, it's hard to mistake that one.
Yeah, it's one of the more picturesque basins, I guess, although it's big. It's not so big you can't look at it all at once. Smithy and Chrysium and Serenitatis and Imbrium in particular are hard to look at all at once. You're always down inside of them in the 60 nautical mile orbit.
Roger, just might mention the diameter for those who are watching at home. That's about 180 miles across, I think.
Okay, that's pretty good. I was going to say about 200 kilometers, I think is what it is. But,
that's right. And Gordy, of course, it's on a part of the moon that you you don't see from where you are.
Roger.
Not yet, anyway. Okay, let's see if we can move on along our orbital track that we've been following to see what new has come into view. Once again, I'll pick you up at Smithy. And move you into Mare Marginis, the Margin Sea. And all the Mare, you may recall now, we have pretty good evidence as a result of the Apollo program that our series of basalt flows that some 3 to 4 billion years ago, in round numbers, were erupted on the moon and filled many of the low areas that existed at that time. Not an awful lot has happened to the moon since, except for the impact craters, some younger ones, since 3 billion years ago, which is one of the reasons it becomes so interesting to man. It's the moon's frozen in a period of history 3 billion years and older, which is a period of history that we cannot recognize very readily on Earth because of the dynamic processes of mountain building and oceans and weathering that are taking place even at the present time. understanding that early history of the moon may mean an understanding of the early history of the Earth. And I think we're well on our way to a first-order understanding of that history as a result of the program. Okay, I'm going to take you a little bit farther along. Again, to Proclus, which is the obvious partially rayed crater with a big excluded zone to the southwest. There's Mare Fecunditatis and its contact area with the Sea of Serenity, Mare Serenitatis. And the landing site now has to be just about on the horizon. I think we were a little premature before.
Roger.
Yeah, we were.
Roger.
That's Microbus A and B just beyond Proclus, sir. Yeah, that's really Microbius.
Now you're starting just to see the Mare of Serenitatis come over the horizon.
Yeah.
And if you take a line from Proclus between the two bright craters.
Can you get more of the moon and less of
the
space up there?
How's that?
That's a bit.
Take that line, and that will take you just about to the landing area. Right at the edge of the
Jack,
next big mare.
Follow that, just as you told us there. Those three craters are very obvious.
Gordo is now just to the left and low center of your picture.
Roger.
You can see that ridge of mountains that sticks out, and the landing site is from here anyway, right in that area.
Right. I guess my line was a little bit north of where we actually should have pointed you. There's some dark area just showing up in around the edge of Serenitatis on the horizon. I think that'll show in your picture, as if I remember some of these from Apollo 10 before. And it's just this side of the dark area that the Taurus Littoral area sits, in the mountains there.
We think we have Maraldi in sight now.
Yes, and you also, Vitruvius should be visible to you just to the south of the landing area.
Vitruvius is in the monitor, so they should have it. Jack, I think you got a good view. You can see Santorinus now. You can probably get a real good shot at the 11th side of Tranquility.
Yeah, you're right.
There's old Santorinus. It's awful big.
How big is it, Gino?
North the southern border of
the old Santorinus is right in the middle of the screen.
We see it.
You've been there before.
Right.
Houston, you just passed 2,000 miles.
2,000 miles. We've got about a 95% full moon in front of us.
Not too far. Matter of fact, I think the Apollo 16 landing area would be just about on the horizon to the south of Tranquilitatis. back up to something that's near and near to our hearts, you probably now can pick out the mountains, the north and south massifs, if you really look closely. What do you think, Gene, from the monitor? Can they see that?
I can't even see the massifs with the naked eye. No.
See the dark area there next to the...
I know where to look, but it's all hard to pick them out. But you're looking right at it. You got it right. Just to the left center, it's just about perfect now, the landing site. There's a little dark area in that peninsula of mountains that sticks out, and the site's just about right in that area.
Roger, Gene,
I wish we could show you some of the...
We know where to look, but it's hard to confirm exactly the structure there.
Come on, you guys, I can even see the light mantle.
Extrapolation is the nature of our art.
I just saw a flash, Jack.
I wish we could...
I didn't hear.
Say again?
I just saw a flash.
I wish we could show you some of the color we've seen on the moon this trip, but I think we're a little too far away from it.
Let's see if I can get the entire moon and look this back in the infield ball from here.
Well, I could show you a picture of the commander. He's fairly colorful.
Gordy, I can't give you the bottom half because I can't quite move around the post here.
So, you know, we're getting a great picture.
Get the whole moon?
80% of it.
I get it.
Okay, I think you can orient yourself with the big basins Jack's been talking about. There's Chrisium. You can see the landing site up in the what is to be the upper left-hand corner of the picture, but you can pick it out by now, I know. Get a better relationship. You're looking at Langrenus down there, that bright crater. You ought to be able to see Humboldt. Maybe Jack can give you the whole thing. Just a second.
Within,
can you give the whole thing?
Yeah. Is that minimum zoom?
Yeah, minimum zoom. Okay, that's pretty good. That's centered, just about right in the center. It ought to fit your screen as we climb out. It's just about at tangential now.
That's perfect, right where you got it.
Okay, we'll hold that for a minute. The Terminator is going across, of course, at the opposite side of the moon from the big basins that you're looking at.
Roger.
Do you know what color does that Mario look like to you?
Jack. What color does a Mario look like to me from here?
Right.
Now that I'm a commander, do I have a right to change my mind?
I guess so.
Tom, you know, I always thought you could almost make it look whatever color you wanted to. It's so subtle. But the Mari to me has got a grayish, a dark grayish mixed with a very subtle tan, and that's what it looks like to me from here.
Oh, Roger.
This is CMP. I agree with that.
The tan is sort of like a dusted tan in spots in and around and on the Mari. I'd say that the basic, if I could pick out a chunk of the gray Mari from here, I'd pick out a very steel gray, a dull steel gray color. But if I just took a massive Mare out, I'd have to mix it with a subtle, very, very subtle pastel tan. That's perfect. You can see Tsiolkovsky now on the Terminator down there. I think Jack's just about got the moon centered perfect. You got Tsiolkovsky on one end, the big basins on the other end. How high are we, Gordy?
Okay, you're 2,327 miles.
You know, I think it's worth noting while we're looking back at the entire moon as we see it here and as you're seeing it there, that America could be proud of the Apollo heritage it's left here. I know we in the program believe that it's really and truly been a heritage that will prove itself to be one of the most beneficial things that have happened to mankind in quite some time, although none of us can really predict the future. But I think everyone who's been part of this program has been proud of its accomplishments. I know we have. We're looking back at some place I think we will use as a stepping stone to go beyond someday. And those aren't words, so it's a faith I truly and dearly have. And I think we will all see it in our lifetime, not just as a nation, but as a world. And I think the Apollo program not only has given us the first steps to that sort of impossible dream, but has given us an opportunity to make the first steps in bringing the world together as one unit so that we can make that step together. It's been a privilege sharing the program, that part of it that we've been in, with as many people as we have and as many people as we can, because I've often thought and I've often said before that anything that's worthwhile doing and doing well is certainly worthwhile sharing with others. This is history being made in our time while you and I are alive, not 100 years ago or 1,000 years ago, and it's sort of the real thing happening right now. You're living it, not just us, and we hope that you're getting as much out of it, not just feeling of pleasure and excitement, but that of accomplishment as we are.
Thank you, Gene. Speaking for the ground part of the Apollo team, we second those thoughts, which you put very well.
Well, Gordy, it's not our accomplishments. It's accomplishments of a nation. And I think the next set of accomplishments are going to be accomplishments of mankind.
Gordy, in that vein, I think a couple words. I'd like to more or less reiterate what I tried to say as we finished our third EVA, and that was that the valley of Taurus Littrow and the orbit of the spaceship America saw the completion of mankind's first steps, first evolutionary steps from the planet Earth into the universe. I think it's important that in doing so he established a tradition of peace and freedom within the solar system. From that larger home now, we move to greet the future.
You know, Houston and America and the world, this is a command module pilot of the spaceship America, and I just feel quite honored and proud to have been a part of this Apollo program. The moon itself is a magnificent, I hate to use the word dynamic because it's really not dynamic. But it's a marvelous planet. It has all the wonderful opportunity for exploration, man must explore. We will continue to explore, and I hope that someday we may all have the opportunity to see mankind enjoy the benefits of the exploration of the Apollo program.
Thank you very much for the great TV show and your final words. We enjoyed every bit of it.
And Gordy, with that, we're about behind our timeline as we fully expected we might be at this point in time. But believe me, it has been a beginning. It is a beginning. I don't think there ever will be an end, not as long as man is alive and willing.
America, Houston, we didn't have data, of course, while you had the TV on. We're wondering if you could figure to send Bay on our voice call, or had you done it earlier? Over.
Oh, Gordy, we were late. When you called, I guess, band camera on, we went back and configured to send Bay and followed those steps in the flight plan. That follow TV on, we had not done that.
Okay, no problem. We're just wondered what we had there.
Okay, are we up to date on the SIMBAY now? Are you satisfied?
We're just now getting some data and taking a look. We'll let you know. Okay, we'll take pan camera off now.
Okay, the pan cam power's off. Man, Ox TV is going to science.
Roger.
Gordy, it's going to be hard to leave this attitude, but we're going to maneuver now.
Roger.
And Houston, America, Mag Delta is empty now. The last 50% was used for taking pictures of the TEI.
Okay, Ron.
Gordo, going back at that burn, it was an outstanding burn. We were looking at about a half a G throughout the burn. She lit off on time. She was a very steady burn. I think she reversed roll a couple times at the dead band. The computer and the EMS were with each other all the way.
chamber pressure on bank A started out at about 87. Bank B brought it up to about 92, 93. And when I first sat down, it was reading zero. Now it's reading five.
Okay, Ron. We got six down here.
Okay, so in all other respects, the burn was nominal. Gordy, you got the burn report and residuals, and we'll leave the tracking to you.
Roger.
I might add, I don't think they built spacecraft any better than they built these two.
I don't see how they could have.
Sure, second that.
And I finally found what I was looking for. I got the man in the moon.
Roger.
For all you non-believers, I verify he really is there.
Okay.
Gordy, these next series of maneuvers bring our middle gimbal angle pretty close to the Apple. We're watching it, but appreciate you not hesitating giving us a call too.
Okie doke.
Gordo, in answer to PP's question about the color of the Maria, down there, when you look at Serenitatis, of course we saw this earlier when we were much closer, but when you look at it from here, it's got on the northeast side a very quite thick laterally across the surface, dark, typically dark with the tannish colors I was talking about. Which sort of borders it, but just north of the overlap between Tranquility and Serenitatis, that contact changes sharply to a, the grays are gone. It's a very sharp contrast, and I think those who have seen it before will remember it. But Serenitatis, from where we stand, is much more tan-dominated than gray-dominated.
Roger.
the first state director out of the computer here shortly. I'm in no hurry to do it, though.
Okay.
Do you have our altitude now? About 4,000 miles, maybe?
I lost that display. Let me check here.
I'm just trying to relate it to when we're coming in. I'd say it's more like 5.
3,100.
How many?
3,100. Houston, sorry to say, but the LCRU has pretty well crumped, evidently. We were talking over the biomed schedule and suggest that with your choice, either Gene stay on it or Jack go on it, and then we'll get back to the flight plan rotation after the EVA. Over.
Okay, I'll stay on it through the EVA. How's that?
Okay, fine.
And we'll pick Jack and Ron up in the morning.
All right.
Gordy, it's Jack. I failed to see the correlation between the LCRU crumping and me going on biomed. Don't tell me you were monitoring it on the surgeon's console there.
Yeah, we don't see any correlation either, but we're trying to look for some.
Okay. Let me know when you have an answer.
Okay.
Houston, America, when you get a hack on our track, I'd like to get a first cut estimate at it.
Okay, will do. Gino, it'll take about an hour to get a good hack, take that much tracking. However, earlier the retro was betting everybody there wouldn't be any mid-courses.
That's a good way to feel. Okay, we'll talk to you in an hour about it.
Who's the wild man retro? I don't want to play poker with him.
It's all dancing. He's a former B-17 pilot. They're always right on.
Now you're starting to scare me.
You can pass the word to Captain Green back there on the tie to clear the flight decks.
Okay, we'll do it.
Last time I had anything to do with a bomber pilot, Gordy, he was scheduling my airplane.
This is Apollo Control at 238 hours, 1 minute, during the...
America?
Go ahead.
We got PTC orientation in the computer.
Negative, but we got it ready to come to you if you give us accept.
The significance of Capcom Gordon Fullerton's comment to the crew a few minutes ago that the LCRU had crumped, as he put it, is that we're no longer able to get television from the lunar surface. The television picture comes back through the Lunar Communications Relay Unit. The instrumentation and communications officer here has tried numerous times to command the TV on, and the commands are not getting through. So apparently the TV... is no longer available to us.
Way back of the only planet that really has much weather visible will be a little repetitive.
Jack, we're heartbroken.
For your first report, you can just play the recording back. It's sunny and clear.
Okay. You're right on that one.
The only sign of any weather
that it's cold also here.
Gordy, you didn't listen. I can't see the Earth. I'm talking about that other planet.
Okay, depending on what part you're looking at, it's cold there too. We got you though. You got your resume.
There might be
you
traces
back
of an atmosphere.
Okay, Gordy, we're in block, and I'm going to give my CMP one more chance at a P-52.
Okay.
Then the LMP gets to start trying.
P-52 refers to the rather tricky job of aligning the stable platform. It does require a fair amount of practice, and Gene Cernan threatening to take over the job, of course, facetiously, if Ron Evans didn't get a good P-52 on his first try. This is the stable platform used as a as an attitude reference by the spacecraft guidance and navigation system. By virtue of the fact that the television was not available to us, we were not able to see the third of the explosive charges fired. The seismic data indicates that that charge fired very close to the planned time at 237 hours, 49 minutes, 52 seconds. That would be just a little more than 2 minutes early. And we're getting good seismic data on it in the control center at this time.
I can look back and with the glasses, binoculars, and I can see the white mantle and see all the massifs in the landing area.
How about that? Back when you had the tube on it, I really think I knew we were looking in the right spot, but, you know, it was just blurry enough you couldn't be sure of exactly what you're looking at.
Gordy, let me, since I don't have anything else to do right now, apparently, I'll tell you a couple things I see right here. The annulus, the dark annulus around Serenitatis, does not look complete in the due north area. Oh, there are little partial pieces of dark material up there, but the main part of the annulus seems to cross into the Mare region that's north of Serenitatis, and I can't remember the name of that right now. But very clearly crosses right over there as a band and then dies out in that north region.
Roger.
Okay, Houston, there's the torque and angles.
Okay, we copy.
Okay, and I'll torque it, let's make it 238.10. I guess you really don't care, though, do you?
And once again, albedo-wise and hue, color hue-wise, that annulus is the same as Tranquility. And essentially the same as most of Fecunditatis. The areas, although Tranquility and Fecunditatis are mottled oakley with tan colors, that mottling seems to be local and probably in large part related to rays that cross those seas.
Roger.
At this viewing angle, the dark mantle around the Taurus Littoral area is just a darker shade of blue-gray to me of the annulus. It's more just a medium gray, I guess. Whereas the Sulpicius gallus dark mantle is a brown-gray, quite distinct in its color hue, to me at any rate.
Roger.
Houston, I can't see stars out there, so I'm going to pulse torque it instead of course line.
Okay.
Hopefully, the reason I cannot is because the Earth is right in the field of view. And it's still pretty bright.
Roger. America, we've got a little musical selection for you here. Stand by.
I'm a face without a name, just walking in the rain, going back to Houston, Houston, Houston. I got the holes in both of my shoes, while I'm a walking case of the blues. Saw a dollar yesterday, but the wind blew it away, going back to
The other direction that time, didn't it?
If you stand by, we'll express to you our sentiments here with a short little tune I think you'll enjoy.
Okay, steady by. Hey, thank you very much. Very enjoyable and also very appropriate.
It certainly has a twofold meaning for us.
That's about par for the CMP now.
Ho hum, another all balls.
You hit it right on the money.
Okay, we got those.
Okay, and we'll torque at 238.23.
Roger.
Ron Evans' last comment referred to the platform alignment he just performed, the so-called P-52, which came out perfectly, no error at all. And, of course, he was referring back to Commander Gene Cernan's previous remark that if the P-52 did not go properly, he would take on the job himself. This, of course, is a task that the command module pilot is most proficient at and has done the most training in preparing for.
Okay, fine.
Hey, Houston, America.
Go ahead, Ron.
You reckon you'd have one of the photo guys down there figure out when we could get a full moon with an 80 millimeter lens?
Okay, I'll put them to work on it.
Okay, appreciate it.
Go ahead, Jack.
On the pan camera, you said to expect to see barber pole when we ran it. I did not see that, just for your information. It went barber pole and then gray.
Okay, thank you.
Gordy, several times I've reminded myself to tell you guys something, and I keep forgetting. I think it was
yesterday when we did an oxygen purge on fuel cell 3 after about, I think it was a minute, possibly a minute and a half, the high O2 flow warning was triggered. Normally that is not triggered when we do the purge. That's the one and only time it's happened. This last one, prior to TEI, there was it was within the green band and there was no fuel cell caution and warning. Just thought you might be interested in that one.
Okay, Jack, thank you.
You can tell Farouk that that crater out on Fecunditatis that I've got a picture of that we worked on back at the Cape and studied quite a bit. It's got all the attributes of everything he told me about it.
Roger.
Yeah, and that's the one. That's the one I was describing to him this morning.
Okay.
You know, Houston, it's also interesting to note that the range of color from this altitude and from 60 miles doesn't seem to change at all, really. In other words, the same impressions that I had of color in the 60-mile orbit are the same impressions that I have now of the same areas.
Okay, that's interesting. You're a little over 5,000 miles out at the moment.
Roger.
Gordy, you don't have that number on the elevator camera yet, do you? We're going to maneuver, and I'd like to get a last shot at it.
Okay, well, you're well beyond a point where you can cover the whole moon with an 80. We were just trying to come up with an altitude for filling up the 250, but you'll get the moon and then some with the 80 right now.
Okay, that's good. Then we'll go ahead and take it with the 80.
Roger. America, Houston at 2:40:30. You'll be about 10,000 miles out, at which altitude the moon will just fill up the 250 lens field of view.
Oh, okay, 2:40:30 it looks like it, for the 250 lens.
Right.
Gordy, are you ready for an Omni, or you want to wait a little bit?
17, Houston, Gordon's off the console for the moment. We'll wait a couple of minutes on the Omni.
America Houston, we need Omni Delta.
Okay, you got Omni Delta.
Okay.
This is Apollo Control at 239 hours, 15 minutes. It's been very quiet, both here in the control center and on board America. The crew at this time appears to be on the nominal flight plan, and they should be in the midst of an exercise period at this time. Also, they have the scientific instrument module bay in the service module of the spacecraft pointed toward Earth with the ultraviolet and infrared spectrometers gathering their first data on Earth from lunar distance. The crew is scheduled to begin its sleep period about 3 hours from now at 242 hours, 20 minutes ground elapsed time. And at the present time, we show Apollo 17, 6,782 nautical miles from the moon, with a velocity of 4,537 feet per second.
Go ahead, America.
Looking at our sketches here and trying to figure out exactly what we're looking at in the dark part of the Earth. I guess it's you, and if it's a clear night, you ought to have a pretty full moon looking back at you.
That's right, we do. In fact, it's nice and clear all day, and I could see it as they came in this afternoon. Your sub-spacecraft point right now is over the Yucatan Peninsula.
Yeah, it's just about the chart I'm looking at, Gray. It looks like about right smack in the center. do you have a general trend on a prediction in a recovery area?
I haven't heard one, but I'll see if we can get one. America, Houston, the sun is just about to enter the lens of the mapping camera. We'd like you to retract it and then close the cover. We're not copying the Simbay data now, so we'd like you to get a mark on both the start of retraction, give a mark on the start of retraction and when the barber pole goes gray.
Okay, we're going to retract the mapping camera. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1,
mark it. Okay. And that was at 22:30. Okay, and we want to keep it running to run the film out of it.
Okay, I understand.
America Houston. How's the mapping camera talkback look?
Barber bones.
Okay, we thought it should have been gray by now.
Okay, let's see, I've got, we're coming up on 4 minutes.
That's what I've got. Okay, thank you.
Took a while, but I made it. Okay, the cover is going closed, barber bowl, gray.
Okay, thank you. Mark, Houston, got a couple answers for you here on O2 caution warning indication on a purge. At the time, you were pulling 37.8 amps out of fuel cell 3 because the SIM bay was fired up, and that'll result in about a flow of 1.37 pounds per hour, which and the trip limit is 1.2, so that's why you got the flag on it, and you can expect to get the caution warning anytime you've got 33 amps or more being pulled out of the fuel cell at the time you purge. Over.
Okay. That sounds good then.
Also, we've tracked you a while now, and mid-course 5 looks like a whopping 3/10 of a foot per second at the present time.
Beautiful, Gordy, beautiful. That is outstanding.
America, Houston, answer to your question about the weather at splashdown. The area right now is 2,000 scattered and 10, winds variable at 10. And forecasting the same, 2,000 scattered and 10, with 3-foot waves, variable at 10 knots on a wind, and some rain showers, but less than 10% coverage on the rain showers in the area. Over.
Carl, you're full of good news tonight. Thank you. Thank you.